That was a funny start. People that don't know, Matt's like, what do I do here? You hit record. Is this thing on? Are we on the air?
Yeah, it's like Ricky Bobby whenever he has the interview. I'm not sure what to do with my hands. Right. Not sure what to do with the buttons.
But Matt's figuring out buttons. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
One night before we invade Comptpalooza, and that means absolutely nothing to people listening to this on Monday morning, because by the time they hear this episode, Comptpalooza will be over.
That's right.
So we are speaking from the future that next week we will have a full report on Comptpalooza and what we did there, and hopefully some audio from our show if it works out to record it well this year. But yeah, we will be at George R. Brown Convention Center less than about a about 12 hours from now. We'll be in our seat doing our work at the podcast booth at Comptpalooza, and we're doing our live show at 2 o'clock tomorrow, which will now be about 36 hours since we did our live show with people hear this.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a mind trip. We're like talking about things we're going to do, but then telling people we already did it. You know,
very weird. It's like you got to talk in the past and in the future.
It's like multiverse type shit, like the movie we're talking about.
Multiverse. That's right.
That's pretty wild, man. We're speaking from the future about the past. But I'm assuming we had a good show at Comptpalooza 2023. And I'm assuming I'm on a couple of panels on Sunday, or I was on a couple of panels, and I think they were good panels. Talking the future of Star Wars and how to start and podcast for beginners. I think they were good panels. In fact, I know they were good panels.
The future of Star Wars.
And I bet we saw some cosplay, probably some pretty good looking chicas in cosplay. Yeah,
some Harley Quinns, and, Deadpool dudes.
That's right.
Thor. Yeah.
I probably bought something Star Wars, because rarely do I walk away from convention without buying something Star Wars-ish.
Yeah.
That is your future take on the past about what happened at Comptpalooza this weekend.
Future take on the past.
And I don't even know what I'm saying anymore.
Yeah. But, what are we saying?
We're talking about the future from the past, or about the past from the future.
We've got to go back to the future.
You got
to
go back, Marty. You got to go back. So Comptpalooza, it's happening soon. Or it did happen.
It did.
This past week. Now that I'm totally not sure what I'm talking about, how was your week, bud?
Good week. It was good, man. I felt like it just kind of flew by, and I was waiting for this day to come where we'd almost be at Comicpalooza, because I want to see if I can get my Scream mask signed by Jack Quaid at the table, and we'll see how that goes. But I'm excited. I'm excited to go there. I had a good week. Just, anticipating for Saturday.
You mean you were excited to be there?
I was excited to be there. Yes.
Yeah. My excitement, I'm always, a low key excitement dude. And you've known me for many years now. And our friends, our former co-host Frank and Long, they've asked me before, like, you don't seem very excited. And that's just how I am. I'm an in the moment person. I always have been, whether it's to see my favorite band Pearl Jam, which I'm seeing in September, or I'm hyped for a movie. It never really hits me till like the credits start rolling for the film, or the band takes the stage. Then I'm all in,
Yeah.
And that's just how I am. I'm very low key about it. Like, it doesn't mean I'm not excited. I'm just like, I'll be there,
I was there. Yeah.
And, that's just how I am, but it doesn't mean I'm not exciting. I'm an in the moment kind of guy, except, when it comes to doing certain things, you start getting excited a little few minutes earlier. You're like, all right, let's go. I wasn't thinking dirty, you pervert.
Yeah. or were you?
And, but yeah, so it'll be fun, man, for sure. It was fun. I'm going to do that the whole fucking show today.
That's funny.
Yeah, it is funny. Because it happened.
And or it will happened. Happen. Yeah. This is like whenever Weird Al Yankovic, had to sing about what happened in Star Wars Episode One, and it hadn't aired yet, but he had to sing about it. He used a bunch of clues from the trailer, and he got it right.
It's funny because William Shatner is there, or was there, and several years ago. Do you remember when we got in on our podcast track through that. What was it? That was it? Space City Con or?
No,
I think Space City Con was not. No, that was a different one you and me went to. But Space City Con was the one I got into through the podcast also. But I don't think you or Frank or anybody went. I just went with the kids. And I'm walking by this table, and I look to my right, and William Shatner's just sitting there. He has like a line, of course, but he was it. It's almost they just dropped a table in the middle of the room for him. It wasn't like he had any fancy banners or anything. He's just sitting there very casually at a table talking to people in their autographs. And I kind of looked over, and I'm like, oh, it's William Shatner. So I was like 6 feet away from Captain Kirk, and that was kind of
nice. Cool. You're like, this guy is fucking banged 15 million aliens or something like that.
I feel like I should have taken my phone out and snapped a quick photo or something, but I might have gotten yelled at.
You could have.
He's a legend, and he will be at Comp Palooza, or he was at Comp Palooza this past weekend. And he was if he wasn't $120 for a photo op, I'd be tempted.
You know, it is tempting, man.
That's a lot of money, man, even for a legend. Because I don't put him quite on legend level like Mark Hamill. I'd drop $120 for a photo off Mark Hamill without thinking twice.
Man, if it was $200, Mark Hamill.
But I just can't do it for William Captain Kirk Shatner. Yeah. No disrespect to him, because, I mean, he's part of my childhood too. Yeah. But
his captain's log has been in many of extraterrestrial beings. I mean, for the sake of exploration.
Some of them aliens are fucking hot, man. I mean, you know.
To go where no man has gone before.
But he went there.
Yep. He hit that final frontier many times.
What did you do that was exciting at Comic Palooza? Or what do you think you're going to do?
Ooh.
Besides hang out with me and do a show, of course.
If I did end up making it there Sunday, me and the wife may have gotten a picture with Starlight. She actually wants that. That's why she wants to go up there. She wants a picture with Starlight.
I guess.
I was like, really?
She's not quite a big enough celebrity for me.
Yeah, for 100, you know?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, she's done the one show.
For me, Quaid's a bigger celebrity, and he's only 60.
Yeah, didn't we pay only like $80? We split it for Christian Ritter, and she's a big
celebrity. Yeah, dude.
At least she's was Jessica Jones, and she was in Breaking Bad, and, you know, at least
she had apartment 18, girl in apartment 19.
Pedigree, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, some of these people. I guess it's because it's hot. But speaking of which, where is the trailer for The Boys 4? I mean, you would think – I've heard rumors of it premiering in August, so you would think a trailer is coming soon.
Yeah. So, I mean, you figure definitely by June we should get something.
Season 3 was about this time a year ago. But they did that with Season 1, too. Season 1 came out like in May. Then Season 2 was like August of next year. It was about 15 months instead of – and then Season 3 came really quickly. You know, it came – and now it's like we're Season 4. So hopefully some announcements soon. And then see if it can be more effed up than the orgasm in episode or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
With the burnt wiener dick and lots of other really bizarre cum shots and things.
Burnt wiener.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was a little shaken by that episode.
Is it Herogasm? That's right. Herogasm. Yeah.
And octopus sex. Anyway, that show is so fucked up, but yet you can't stop watching it. I'm still disappointed Carl Urban wasn't there this weekend.
Oh, man. That sucks, man.
Because we would have been all over that photo op. We'd have been like, hell yeah, dude. Let's go take a photo with Bones. And I was already thinking we would have made him do something silly like he's choking one of us or something. It would have been funny. I don't know.
Judge Urban Dredd.
He seems like a cool dude. Like he'd have been down with some cool shit doing photo ops.
Yeah, man. He does. Sucks,
man. But oh well. But anyway, man, you know, I've had a busy week too. It did kind of go by fast, but it also allowed me to not really watch much this week, unfortunately. I was trying to watch Ant-Man and Wasp. But I haven't had a chance. I did finish Dungeons and Dragons, and man, it didn't get better for me, Matt. I didn't like that movie, man. I posted on my Facebook about it, and I got attacked a little bit by a couple of Dungeons and Dragons nerds. I felt a little attacked.
I guess
I'm not a D&D nerd enough to really understand why they considered it good. Because I just didn't really care for it. I found it kind of dumb, not really that exciting. Chris Pine is fine because he's Chris Pine. But overall, I just wasn't like I wasn't that engaged with the movie. I didn't care about anything that happened. The climax was kind of unclimactic, so to speak. It was just not that great, but you know, to each their own, I guess. Whatever, you know, I didn't really quite get the appeal of it. Like I said, I'm not a D&D nerd enough, I guess, to appreciate it. So I apologize, any D&D nerds that are listening, don't attack me. You know, I just wasn't my thing. That's, you know, and that's, I finished that and then I watched him. I've just been kind of nitpicking at movies. I watched about the first hour of the Boondock Saints just for the hell of it. Cause I love that movie. Mm-hmm. And, I can't go down the street without running into nine guys. You fucked. The movie is so fucking quotable. What the fuck? You need a rope, man. Charlie Bronson always needed a rope. He's like, well, get your stupid fucking rope. I mean, dude, the movie's still
so amazing. We got ourselves a cowboy.
Yeah. Still blows my mind that movie was so successful despite having no theatrical release, very little fanfare, and it's been one of the most profitable independent films of all time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so good. You know, I mean, I can see why critics didn't like it. I'm smart enough to notice the flaws in the film, but yet it's so goddamn entertaining too, you know? And that's the cool thing about the Boondock Saints. And then I watched, it's kind of a sad movie. I could probably get made fun of this, but man, I don't know. I felt like I was only like, you know, I listen mostly metal and rock and roll and stuff, but I mean, I like me some country music and I love George Strait. And, so I sat down, I watched Pure Country cause it's on HBO Max, the only movie he ever did, you know, yeah. But it's actually a good film. It's really not a bad movie. You know, it's just kind of a romantic sap flick. But, I mean, George is good in it. It's got a good story. I mean, it's a very entertaining movie and an amazing soundtrack, one of his most successful records of all time.
Wow.
You know, I mean, you know, it's – and I did not know this because, you know, when I watch movies, it's kind of a habit because we podcast. Because I'll look on the IMDb page and look at research and stuff. I did not know that Colonel Tom Parker, who was, of course, Elvis's manager – was looking for another successful music star, and he approached George about being in films, and George kept turning him down, saying, no, you know, I don't want to do that. I want to keep focusing on my music career. But it came to a point where George took a little bit of a back step to the success of Garth Brooks and Brooks and Dunn, some of these other music acts in the 90s. And so George finally said, you know what, I'll do a movie. And that's why he did Pure Country. He didn't like the way Hollywood handled things. He was so devoted to his wife. He wasn't going to kiss a girl. He wasn't going to curse, even though he does say ass in the movie.
Yeah.
And Hollywood agents basically told him, like, you know, if you're not going to do this stuff, then and George's like, you know what? I'm not going to do it then. I'll just stick with singing. And that's why he never did another film, because he wasn't going to bow to Hollywood standards because of his own personal beliefs. And I think that's pretty cool. You know, that's why he never kisses Harley in the movie, because he was so devoted to his wife, even though it was in the script. He said he wasn't going to do it, and the director and the girl who played Harley respected it. That's why he never kisses her in the film. So
you got to respect a man who stands firm, you know, and plans his morals, you know.
Oh yeah, George is definitely an example of that. You know, and one of our greatest musicians and singers of all time. You know,
he's the king, baby.
That's right,
the king.
There's a reason they call him King George.
Mm-hmm.
And still putting out good music, so it's amazing.
Yeah,
that's really about all I watched this week. You know, damn, I really want to get to Ant-Man and Wasp and check it out. I sat down a couple of times to try to start it and just didn't work. But I'm work next week, then I'm on vacation the week after that, so I'll definitely get it watched here in the next couple.
Oh, okay, months. Yeah, you got some time coming up.
Yep.
Yeah, I checked out some more Babylon 5, and man, I was like, oh, I should be most of the way through the season by now. And I look, it's got like 22 episodes on the first season.
Yeah, the whole show's like 120 episodes total.
Yeah. So I'm at like, I think I'm on episode 10. I think I've watched up to episode 9. I think I'm on episode 10. But it's been fun. I mean, I think my favorite episode so far, the guy who played the doctor on NCIS, he plays a, like an, I guess he's an archaeologist And it's like the fifth or sixth episode of the season. And he's able to smuggle aboard this artifact that's actually like an ancient alien or some alien creature that takes a hold of you and assimilates your body into like a friggin' weapon. And he takes over his assistant, and he's like friggin' tanking the security force. And they're trying to tank him down, and they almost take him out alien style, where they get him to the airlock and shoot him into space. But the guy's able to overcome the alien and pull it off of himself. It's pretty fun, man. I think there's definitely some really good episodes in there. There is some, you know, romance drama in there, which is kind of funny because, my wife likes her soap operas. And I said, you know, some of these episodes, it's almost like a space soap opera. Mm-hmm. I said, there's this girl that, Londo really likes, and but she's supposed to like steal information from him, and he's like heartbroken whenever she does it, you know, and then she can't live with herself because she actually likes him, and he asks Chakar for discretion in finding her, and they are able to find her and where she ran off to, and they're able to save Londo's career and stuff like that. But I was like, yeah, it's like there's different elements to that show. It's very interesting.
Right. And, once you get to the second season, it's going to start really flowing. And like I said, Londo will be your most, you'll love him and you'll hate him so much by the time you're done.
Yeah.
It's such a good, well-written show. Every single character in that show is so thought out and well-written. I know you said you bought the movie box. Don't watch in the beginning until after season four.
Okay.
Because otherwise you won't know what's going on, and it will ruin some stuff. You want some stuff to be a surprise. Now, Third Space actually takes place like after the third season, so you can watch that.
Okay.
I think River of Souls, you might have to Wikipedia the timeline of it. I think River of Souls is after season three also. And then there's a timeline out there that tells you exactly when to watch Third Space. I think it's actually partway into season three. And then the final movie is actually kind of a lead into the Crusade show that only lasted 12 episodes. Mm-hmm. If I remember right, because I think there's four movies in the box set. Yeah. But in the beginning is the best one, but don't watch it until I think, like I said, look up the timeline. I think it's like after season four to watch in the beginning. Cause there's so much
battle, right? Isn't that the battle?
It tells parts of the battle. Yeah. It's Londo when he's older and he's retelling the stories of the Battle of the Line and some of the things that happen, but there's a lot of really important stuff between him and Jakar that you don't want to have ruined. So you want to wait until you get to all that before you watch in the beginning. So, but nice. Definitely, man, I'm glad you're watching it, man. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. I love it so much. You know, I have all the DVDs, and I'll never get rid of them because the show's not available on Blu-ray, and it shows up streaming on Tubi and different sites, but it tends to move around and J. Michael Straczynski has said, you know, more than likely with streaming now, the Blu-ray set's never going to happen. He said it's up to Warner Brothers if it does happen, but just the times we live in, you know, there's no reason for Warner Brothers to put it on Blu-ray when, you know, they can just stream it. So
exactly.
That makes sense. There's no money to be made in physical media for a show that's 30 years old that has a big fan base, but how much of that big fan base is actually going to purchase the Blu-rays, you know? So I guess it makes sense. Yeah. Unless Warner put out as a Warner archive item, you could buy it through their website and they print it on demand, you know,
like they've done limited release or something.
They do that there. You can go on Warner archives website and there's a lot of movies you can buy that are printed on demand that they only sell through your website. So.
Okay. I'll have to check that out. See if there's something I recognize.
Yeah.
But and I know you mentioned you had watched half the episode, but I did watch the first episode of FUBAR.
Oh, dude, it was so bad.
Yeah, it's not that great,
man. It's badly acted. Everything looks like it's done in one take. The dialogue's terrible, and we said it kind of fast. We're talking about FUBAR, the new Arnold Schwarzenegger show that's on Netflix, and it's cliche as fuck, and it's just poorly written. It wasn't good.
Yeah, one of the pieces of dialogue, because if you watch the trailer, it's about him and his daughter. The line for his daughter is, fuckity fuck, asshole fuck. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I was like, yeah, you writers, you can stay on strike unless you can come up with something different.
And Arnold, who, you know, we love, just doesn't even look like he's trying. He's kind of hamming it up, kind of mailing it in.
Mailing it in is probably more like
it. At least he tried.
I wish he would ham it up a little bit more.
At least he tried in his 80s and 90s films. This one, he just doesn't even care anymore. You know, it's disappointing, man, because I liked the trailers for it. I was like, this looks kind of fun. Then I go and watch half the first episode. I'm like, this isn't good.
Yeah.
You know, and some of it, too, I was a little tired, too. So I was like, I couldn't keep my eyes open. I'll finish it later. But I just don't know if I'll go finish it. It just doesn't seem worth it.
Yeah, it almost feels like an in-between thing. It's not bad. It's just not good. I don't know if it's okay, though. It might be less than okay, you know, whenever you do that, you know, it's and that's kind of what it is. And I don't know if it's worth, you know, maybe I'll give it another episode. But I don't know. I think I'd rather just watch Babylon 5 and keep getting caught up, because those episodes are a while. I think it's like 40-ish minutes every time between the ads. Yeah. But yeah, man, you know, having fun with that. And I did get John Wick and Super Mario Brothers. The boys wanted Super Mario Brothers, so I went ahead and bought it just so that they'd watch it. And we had a little movie night, and they've just been watching that. And then the Pagemaster was on sale a month ago, and they've been watching the Pagemaster a lot. And I feel like that's a movie Disney should try and remake, because it's a lesser known and it's a cool story. You could kind of redo it in today's times. Macaulay, I don't know if you ever saw it. Did you ever see The Pagemaster?
I may have a long time. I don't know what it is, though.
Yeah, it's Christopher. Macaulay Culkin's this kid. He's kind of afraid of everything. He's very smart, but he knows all these statistics. And I guess his dad's very annoyed with him because he's always like, you know, statistically, Dad, you know, you could get hurt doing that. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, this is what happens when you do that. And he's like, you know, son, you can't be afraid to be a boy, basically, and get out there and have fun, because you're too statistic driven, basically. And so his dad's like, you know what, go get me some nails from the hardware store for this treehouse I'm building you, even though the dad knows his son's afraid of treehouses. I'm sorry. So on his way to go pick up some nails for his dad, there's a thunderstorm that happens, and he's forced to take cover in this library ran by Christopher Lloyd. And, you know, he gives him a library card, but Culkin's like, well, I just need a phone to call my dad. You know, it's raining. I'll let him know that I'm kind of cooped up here. And he points him in the direction on where to go. And the mural at the top of the library splashes bright colors around, and and the library is animated now. And the books talk to him. Patrick Stewart is one of the books, which I didn't know, because the accent is so rough. Like, it's a pirate. He's like a pirate book, and he's in his book is Captain Ahab, pirate stories, and stuff like that. And then they run into other books. Whoopi Goldberg is fantasy. And, you know, she's got stories of like knights and fairy tales. And then another book is horror. And so you go through like Dr. Jekyll, you go through 1,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and it's full of adventures to where he is forced to overcome his fears. And at the end, whenever he finally makes it to the exit and, you know, and gets out of it, he's not afraid anymore. And he's pushed past his fears. And it's not a great Disney film. I think it's enjoyable. It's entertaining. But it's so little known, I feel like, today, that you could definitely remake it and people would take it as a fresh take. And, you know, I think Disney should really focus on just like you remake bad movies, you know, you remake bad movies because they deserve to be remade. You remake lesser known movies.
They would probably just remake it and put it on Disney Plus.
Probably. Yeah. It would, that movie for sure would definitely be a Disney Plus movie. But it's fun. It's fun. They're, you know, of course, home now, school's out, and they're looking for stuff to do. And if they're too tired from outside, they're watching all kinds of stuff. That was what they decided to watch. Other than that, man, I got nothing.
Well, that's okay, because I got news to do. We got a third trailer this week for The Flash, which for some reason people said the new trailer was a spoiler. I watched it. I didn't see anything really spoilers with it. I just felt maybe it gave us some new footage from some different angles and stuff, but it really didn't tell us anything that the other trailers didn't tell us.
Just a different look. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm getting excited for this movie. You know, I think it's going to be swell. I mean, it looks freaking incredible. I'm really hoping it lives up to the hype that James Gunn and many critics are giving it. And, it's really all I can say at this point. It's like, we've been waiting 2 years for this movie, you know, kept getting pushed back with COVID and filming delays and reshoots and whatever else. And it feels like it's something special on the horizon coming from this Flash movie. And in my nostalgic of being excited about seeing Keaton, I purchased a 1989 Taco Bell Batman cup off of eBay just because I'm like, I don't know. The nostalgia hit me right in the nuts. I had to get nuts and, you know, buy an 89 Batman Taco Bell cup.
That is cool, man. I didn't even think about looking for that.
And, you know, there's people forget this is coming. You know, we have a new Transformers movie in a couple weeks, and which I have a feeling at this point I'm going to wait for it later to watch because there's just too much coming out and I can't afford to go all these movies. You know, it eats up your money. And but, you know, there's I forget they're making a new animated Transformers film called Transformers 1, and it's going to tell the origins of Cybertron, the Transformers, apparently, and it's coming out. It got pushed back a couple months. It was supposed to be July next year, but now it's September of next year. And I kind of forgot they were making this. I hope it's good, you know, because we already have the classic 1986 film, which, you know, I don't talk about this on things we watch because I don't always talk about old movies we watch. But you know, yeah. I watch Transformers the movie a lot, just as a comfort movie. I'll put it on the background. It's like my favorite, probably my favorite all-time cartoon movie next to The Jungle Book. You know, I mean, we'll put Transformers movie on the background all the time.
It's fun.
So I'm hoping Transformers 1 is good as well when it comes out next year. You know, Sony had some announcements this week for PlayStation. This was kind of expected. They're doing a remake of Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater, which is strangely, you know, you would think they're going to do a remake. You would think Metal Gear Solid or even Metal Gear Solid 2. 3 was the least popular sequel, which not that 3 wasn't good, but it was really hard. And it just did not go. It did not do as well overall. So it's interesting. That's the one they chose to remake. But, you know, I love the Metal Gear games. I don't have a PS5, so I don't really care that they're remaking it. And I don't know if I'll ever get a PS5 as I'm starting to just not play games as much as I used to. So I don't know if I want to make the investment, but, for you Metal Gear heads, there's a Metal Gear 3 remake coming next year. I think next year. And then lastly, you mentioned that you purchased John Wick, and I'm going to buy it too in a couple weeks. So I want a hard copy, and I'll probably rewatch it on your account eventually, even though for some reason it hasn't linked to your Amazon Prime yet, even though you bought it on Vudu. I think sometimes it takes a few days for it to link.
Yeah.
But their Lionsgate apparently is – you know, we know the Continental's coming out later this year on Peacock and the prequel series, but apparently John Wick 5 is in development. I'm, you know, trying to stay spoiler free because some people still haven't seen it, but I'm trying to figure out how they're going to make a 5 based on how 4 ended. But yet also based on how 4 ended, I guess there was allusions that could be made to see how they can make a 5 based on Winston's dialogue at the end of the film. But at the same time, I really felt that you've never seen Breaking Bad, but Breaking Bad has an ending that's comparable to how John Wick ended. And you were satisfied when it was all over. You just went through 60 episodes with these characters from Breaking Bad, but you get to the end, you're like, okay, that's how I felt with John Wick 4. I was satisfied. Did I necessarily like the way it ended? No, because you want to root for your heroes, but I was satisfied. So if they never made more, you know, it took me a day or two after watching it to think, you know what? I'm good. If they don't make more, it's great. I had four amazing films.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. But we might get a fifth one. So we'll see.
Feels like, you know,
beating a Jack, dead horse.
Jack Slater. You took my second cousin. Big mistake. Start making up shit.
In any way.
John, so they destroyed your goldfish. None.
So the movie we're discussing today is a movie that I absolutely adore and was rewatching it this week. And I, you know, this, when did this come out? 2018?
18. Yep. 2018.
So, you know, almost 4 years later, we're fixing to get the sequel in a couple of weeks. And 4 years later, man, this movie still makes me smile. It makes me a little tear up a little bit. It's an emotional, it's a very emotional animated film, with a great story, great characters, mm-hmm. characters that feel alive through animation. You know, and that may seem like a silly thing to say, but sometimes animation can be flat and you don't always feel the characters. Now you do like Toy Story. You certainly feel the feelings of Woody and Buzz.
Yeah.
And Pixar does a great job with that. But most of the time animated films, you don't feel that, but Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is definitely a film where the characters feel alive and not just animated mated characters. They feel,
that's just what you get from putting the Lego Movie and 21 Jump Street together. This is the love child of those two things.
I suppose literally. So. This movie came out when the trailers hit. I was like, you know, it looks interesting, but it's Sony, you know, who knows what it's going to be.
Exactly.
And then I went and saw it in theater. You know, the early reviews started coming out and saying just how good it was and how solid it was. And went to the theaters to see this and walked out just going, my God, that was a beautiful love letter to Spider-Man, to comic books, to Stan Lee.
To Sam Raimi, to Stan Lee for sure.
There's some Sam Raimi nods in it too, but just an overall fantastic story told on the screen with beautiful animation, breakthrough new styles of animation we hadn't seen before, characters that you truly cared about through their development, through just great storytelling, and an overall very satisfying, exciting motion picture. I mean, it's this movie is cut paced fast, but also it takes the time to develop these characters and through remarkable storytelling. Miles Morales is a character that, who, you know, he came onto the scene through Brian Michael Bendis in the comic books a few years ago and has gone on to become one of the most popular Marvel characters of all time. People on the streets now that don't follow comics recognize that Miles Morales, oh, he's the other Spider-Man, you know, besides Peter Parker. And that's incredible.
And he had only come out 6 years before this movie.
Right.
This is a 6-year-old comic book character, and they're going to make a movie of him. That was pretty bold.
He's so well written that he's become that popular so fast.
Yeah, he's definitely just like Peter Parker, and where you could relate to him and say, hey, you know, I've got these problems too, mm-hmm. you know? So that's really what helps, you know, tie you into Miles's character.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to sum the movie up a little bit, basically you're introduced to Miles. He's moving to a new school and, you know, he's basically a kid trying to find himself in life. You know, he's not sure who he is, and you know, he doesn't, you know, think his parents always listen to him because, you know, his dad's a cop, and he looks up to his Uncle Aaron, and, you know, he's hanging out with his Uncle Aaron when he gets bit by a spider, and he's not sure what's going on. And at the beginning, through all of this, he witnesses the Spider-Man in his universe, Peter Parker, get killed by the Kingpin.
Voiced by Chris Pine.
Yeah. The Kingpin kills Spider-Man, and the world, the city of New York is upset. And through a series of events, the multiverse opens up, and Miles Morales meets new friends that have spider-like powers. He meets Peter Parker from another universe, Gwen Stacy, Penny Parker, Peter Parker, and Spider-Man Noir, voiced by Nicolas Cage, which is a really cool, or the wind follows me everywhere I go, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, and as they try to stop the Kingpin, who's trying to open up a portal himself through the multiverse to bring his wife and child back that have are no longer with him. But they have to stop the Kingpin from doing this because the power he's using can destroy the whole city. So they have to stop him from allowing him to open up the portal. But he also needs to send back the spider people from the other universe, because if they don't go back, they're going to dissipate, because they're not really, their molecules aren't really staying together in this universe because they're not made to be there. So throughout this, they have to hatch a plan to stop the Kingpin. And meanwhile, Miles and Kingpin also has help from Dr. Octopus's daughter. It's his daughter, right? Yeah, in this universe. Yep. Yeah,
Liv. And, Liv Octavius.
And then Miles throughout this is also very much a coming of age story, as he's trying to figure out who he is and how to use these new powers. And some of my favorite parts of this movie is where the elder Peter is telling him, like, you know, you have it in you the whole time. It's a leap of faith, which is just the books that Stan wrote. So much of that was about that, you know, some of these characters, especially Spider-Man, and learning who he is and believing in himself. And we saw that with a lot of his characters, you know, just having faith in themselves and becoming who they are. And Philip Lord and Christopher Miller, who helped write this and did the Lego movie, they really understood who Miles was and who Spider-Man is and who the character is. And it all comes out on screen so brilliantly throughout this film. And the leap of faith scene is an incredible sequence of art and beauty and just emotion when Miles puts on the costume and becomes who he's ultimately meant to be. And he also has, but he also has his tragedies as he finds out his uncle Aaron is working for the Kingpin as the Prowler. And he unfortunately gets shot and Miles has to witness his uncle dying. And he finds out through the other Spider people that they're not so different, that they all have this tragedy that surrounds them that makes them a better person to become the Spider-Man they need to be, or Spider-Woman. And it's all so well done. And so that's kind of a long but heavy summary of what this movie is. And that just shows you the depth of this film. I mean, how rewatching this week, it's a heavily layered, pretty intense film for an animated film, but it's also not so intense that kids can't enjoy it. You know, it's
speaks
to the children watching it too, but it's got some heavy layers for the adults.
Yeah. Like, you know, Peter B. Parker, voiced by the, that technician from Jurassic World who had the Jurassic Park shirt and said it was retro. I didn't realize that's who was voicing Peter B. Parker. He's kind of down on his life. He got divorced from Mary Jane in his universe. He's eating pizza, even though he says he was doing crunches while he was sucked into the particle collider. He's put on a little bit of weight, and he was afraid of having a child, and mentoring Miles has kind of showed him that, you know, he can do it, and that he can take the leap of faith in his own universe. And whenever Miles lets him go, he tells him not bad kid. It's like, that's a good moment. There's quite a few of those good moments in there. And, we can see by the trailer in this new, Spider-Man movie that's coming out, that looks like Peter B. Parker was able to mend things together, and he became a dad, looks like, which is cool.
Yeah. That's the cool thing about the end of this film, is like, you think about all these characters, whether it's Gwen or Penny Parker, that they move on and they correct their lives, because they all have something they need to correct in their lives. Miles is his relationship with his parents. And like I said, Peter B. Parker and Mary Jane well, at least those two, they have the most important storyline. Gwen and her best friend, who she lost back home, and opening up herself to making friends and being who she can be. And, and voiced incredibly well by Haley Steinfeld, who does great as Gwen. But I think that's another thing this hits home about is Miles being this young teenager that, you know, like I say, he's trying to figure himself out in life, and his relationship with his father is a bit struggled. You know, he loves his dad. It's not like they hate each other, but he feels like his dad doesn't quite understand him because his dad's a cop and his dad wants him to be you know, I wouldn't say perfect, but his dad kind of holds him to a high standard and doesn't believe in his art and things he does. And, you know, he doesn't want him looking to up to his Uncle Aaron, who he thinks is a bad influence on him because Uncle Aaron influences him to do the art. So, yeah. You know, it's also about Miles healing that relationship with his dad by the end of the film and, you know, him believing in his dad and his dad believing in him.
Yeah, no, there's a big part of that. Trying to, you know, make that work. Like you said, he respects his dad. You can definitely tell his dad definitely cares for his son, but he also has reservations about some of his choices. And you know, he, even though his son wants to go to the local middle school or local high school, you know, he wants Miles to go to this magnet school that he was able to get accepted into, you know, even though he feels like he just doesn't belong there.
Right.
So there's, you know, that part where, you know, and as a parent, you get it, you know, you're trying to, push your kid to be better. Right. And maybe that's not what they want. And, you know, but you don't see that, you know, you're seeing a different picture. So it's, you know, it relates to kids as much as it does parents, I think, in doing that, kind of giving you a snippet of the dad's side. You know, and I think it's funny whenever he uses the PA and he's like, you gotta say I love you back.
Yeah. His parents do that kind of stuff. You know, uh-huh. and around this wonderful story that's told in this film, man, there's so much. Philip Lord and Chris Miller throw so much love in this film for comics. Like, it starts from the very beginning when you see the Approved by the Comics Code Authority. It's a huge nod to this comics of the 60s and 70s. You know, we get those nods to Sam Raimi at the beginning and the Peter Parker and the films from the 2000s. We get the popsicle. We get the pointy meme in this. We get,
yes,
you know, we get the 1960s cartoon, the theme song. And there's, you know, the wonderful tribute to Stan Lee in this where he tells Miles, you know, anyone can be Spider-Man, you know, just, and that's all in the first 15 to 20 minutes of this film. You know right away that these guys did the research. And I think that's another wonderful thing on top of the story. And then not only that, the animation style, it's incredible. It's like a living comic book that comes alive for parts of this film. I remember talking with someone, they said they were annoyed by the film, by the blurriness of it. And so I'm like, have you not read comics from the 70s? It's all done on purpose. They wanted to get it like it was a comic book that came alive. It's supposed to have a blurred effect. It's supposed to have it go. I mean, there's 1950s all the way up to current technology in this film that they do on purpose to give it that look of almost being timeless, you know, I think. And they did it on purpose. And I think it works amazingly, you know, the way that the film is animated.
Yeah.
It's a true love letter to the comic book medium, like I said, dating back to the beginnings of Marvel to now.
Yeah, and you've got I like how they've got Stan Lee in there as the gift shop salesman, gift shop owner, and he's Miles is trying to buy the Spider-Man suit, the cosplay one or costume one that looks like it's kind of fairly cheesy. And he's like, how do I know if it fits? And he's like, oh, it all fits eventually. Right. And then it says no refunds or returns on the sign. But I guess there's more of him, and I haven't tried this to see if, you know, see if I can catch it. But I guess every time a bus passes by, they put some images of Stan Lee in there as this was one of his last cameos to do. And
there's also several 42s in the film, nods to Jackie Robinson and the importance of him being the first black baseball player to break the major league barriers, which is a nod, not that Miles Morales is the first black superhero or anything, but it was a huge influence on one of the directors of the film. I read that he was a big Jackie Robinson fan, so he put a lot of 42s in here as a nod, you know, for black culture and the importance of it. Because Miles is a character that's very important to me, I think, to black culture, because not only is this kid black, but he also is part Puerto Rican. You know, his mother's Puerto Rican. So he appeals to a large demographic of people, and that's amazing. You know, but he also, you can be any color and relate to Miles. And I think that's an amazing job that the writers have done for this character.
What's weird, though, is that they named his dad after a Confederate president, Jefferson Davis. So it's like, you've really got diversity there. I was like,
right.
Why would you name him that? But hey, you know, I think Miles is the focal point. And mm-hmm. he's definitely got there's a lot of diversity there. There's a lot of challenges. I like the little part where he's failing and or he's got a bad grade in Spanish and mm-hmm. his mom's like, what? So I think that's in the new movie trailer. No, oh, that's in the new. Yeah. Okay. I guess I got that. That's confused.
The new trailer for the new movie.
But that's, you know, just another, I guess, example of the cultural aspects of his life kind of thrown in there too. And that's, you know, what Spider-Man's all about, you know, trying to form that connection with you, kind of like X-Men, that, you know, hey, I can relate to this person more so than I can Superman. You know, it's hard to relate to an alien that's impervious to everything. You've got this guy that, you know, he's got powers, but he's trying to balance his home life. He's trying to balance his school life, his relationships, being a kid, you know, does he have time to even do it? You know, there's so many layers and stuff to unpack there. It's easy to relate. And that's what's just cool about the Spider-Man character in general. And Miles is definitely just different version of that Peter Parker. Even though he's not the Golden Age Spider-Man, he definitely makes it his own and brings his own story to the table. And it's always fun hearing Stan Lee just talk about Spider-Man, because you know how much he just loves Spider-Man. So it's cool seeing him, you know, in this movie.
And
the different Spider-Man, I thought we were going to get something similar to the animated series that aired on Fox, get like the Iron Suit Spider-Man, that one Spider-Man that's like Bruce Wayne in his universe. I think it's funny that we got Peter Porker and Spider-Man Noir and Penny Parker.
Yeah, there's some brave story choices in this, but they worked. You know.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And we get a purple hat Green Goblin finally.
Yeah.
Finally got one similar to the comics.
And you know, it makes you wonder what this movie came out of nowhere and was so well done and so well received. And, you know, you felt like you didn't need a sequel, but we are getting a sequel here in a couple of weeks with Across the Spider-Verse. And it makes you wonder what else we'll get, what other characters we'll get in this. You know, like you said, some of these other costumes, there's a lot of costumes when they visit Aunt May's secret lair that she had for Peter Parker. And
oh, that's an emotional thing too.
Yeah.
She lost Peter Parker. He lost Aunt May, and then they get to see each other again.
Right. Yeah, so you know, wonder what they'll go in the sequel, and I also feel like Into the Spider-Verse is so good. Let's hope they can strike lightning twice. I hope that Across the Spider-Verse is just as good, because unfortunately, Christopher Miller and Philip Lord did not hit lightning twice with the Lego Movie 2. Lego Movie is really good, and Lego Batman is really good, and Lego Movie 2 was kind of a letdown. So. Hopefully the same thing does not follow them with their Spider-Man sequel.
Yeah. And you know, whenever you're trying to establish a character and you're watching him go through all those different obstacles, I think maybe there's more story there to make a really good movie, versus like starting with an already established character, kind of like what they did in Lego Movie 2. You know, Emmett's already established as a master builder. Now they have to create something else for him. Well, hopefully it doesn't fall into that same vein.
And with Miles, but the thing is with Miles, I think it would be easy to do that. I think in the first one, it became about him trusting his friends and his leap of faith. I think this one has to be about protecting his friends and protecting his family. Now that he's Spider-Man, he's going to have to, you know, realize his mom and dad are affected by this. And his friends are affected by that. And I think that's hopefully the route they go with this in the sequel. I think it makes the most sense. Now that he's made the leap of faith, he's got to, now it's about the responsibility. With great power comes great responsibility. And I think that's what the sequel should focus on. And we'll see here in a couple of weeks. I'm on vacation, so I'm probably not going to go see it till that Monday, the 5th, because my nephew's getting baptized Saturday. So I got a lot going on that weekend. So yeah. I might have to wait till Monday to see it. But that's okay. You know, I don't mind waiting a couple of days, but I'm looking forward to it when it comes out here in a couple of weeks. So we'll see. But Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, man, such an incredible animated film that I don't want to say it came out of nowhere in 2018, but let's say it exceeded people's expectations. That's a good
thing. Oh, definitely. And there was a lot of people that weren't expecting much. And
right.
Whoa, you know, their bar was set low and their expectations were greatly exceeded.
If I remember correctly, even our co-host Long, he was like, I don't want to see it. Then he saw it. He's like, wow, that was really good.
Yeah.
You know, because it really was. I know it blew me away when I saw it. I walked out of the theater just like, wow, that was great. And this is probably, I mean, I've enjoyed Homecoming and you know, with the 7, 8 Spider-Man live action films, I've enjoyed them. But Into the Spider-Verse is probably my favorite Spider-Man film. I mean, I just really like the movie a lot.
Wow.
You know, I think it's so well done. You know, I think part of it too, there's so much more you can do with animation that you can't do in live action without it costing gazillion dollars. I mean, think about the whole final sequence of this film in the room fighting the Kingpin. You couldn't do that live action.
No, you couldn't. Those effects would be crazy, man.
Right. But it's absolutely incredible in animation. So
you'd need an end game. Budget.
The leap of faith sequence alone would be an extraordinary stunt effect in a live action film. You know,
so. And if you look, those buildings are pointed down as the way the buildings are pointed. If it's meant for you to mentally flip that picture, right. Whenever he jumps off the building, Miles is rising up. He's not falling down. He's rising up.
Right.
So really good storytelling there.
Yeah, just a remarkable film. Well worth your time to watch if you've never seen it. And next week, we are going to have our full Comic Palooza recap from what we did this weekend. And we are also going – it's our 350th episode, which is – you know, anytime you hit those 50s and 100s, it's a milestone episode. And we're going to stick with tradition. For 150, we did Raiders of the Lost Ark. For 250, we did – Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. So episode 350, we are going to discuss Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
We're about to complete a great quest. The Holy Grail, Dr. Jones.
Oh, rats.
This is it. Look, the shield is the second mark. We found it.
Indiana Jones is on the quest of a lifetime. But for some adventures, one Jones is not enough.
Dad? Junior? Don't call me that, please.
Follow me! I know the way!
A race across three continents.
And in this sort of race, there's no silver medal for finishing second.
Hang on, Dad! We're going in!
Into the homeland of the enemy.
Nazis. I hate these guys.
Our situation has not improved.
In his search for the Holy Grail.
How dare you kiss me?
Are you crazy? Don't go between them!
Go between them, are you crazy?
Where's my father?
In the belly of that steel beast.
Dad! Junior!
You call this archaeology?
The quest for the Grail is not archaeology. It's a race against evil.
Germany has declared war on the Jones boys.
Those people are trying to kill us.
I know, Dad!
It's a new experience for me.
Happens to me all the time. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Have the adventure of your life, keeping up with the Joneses.
This is a lot of people's favorite Indiana Jones film, and I do like it a lot. Raiders is just always going to be my favorite because it's such a special moment in my heart for that, what Raiders did for me as a kid getting into movies. But that doesn't stop me from enjoying The Last Crusade quite a bit too. I mean, it's a really, really good film as well, and it's got the great Sean Connery in it with another great story, and it's a really, really good movie. I'm looking forward to
River Phoenix too. The late River Phoenix, who played young Indy.
Mm-hmm. He plays young Indy at the beginning of the film. Just another good. I mean, another good film directed by the great Steven Spielberg. And that's going to be our big 350th episode next week, along with our Comic Palooza recap on the show. As we definitely won't be talking from the future into the past next week. We will actually be talking about the past next week on the show.
Yeah, definitely.
When we discuss Compilers of 2023 and discuss Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. So we hope you like Indiana Jones, because we're going to be discussing Indiana Jones at Compalooza tomorrow, or we discussed it Saturday at Compalooza, and then we're going to discuss Indiana Jones on next week's episode, and quite possible we're doing Dial of Destiny at the end of the month as an episode. So lots of Indiana Jones in your future this month on the Rebel Radio Podcast. But we thank you as always for listening, therebelradiopodcast.com, for all your Rebel Radio needs, and you can find the links there to all the apps that we're on: Apple Podcasts, iTunes, same thing, Amazon Music, Google Play, iHeartRadio. Well, there is no Google Play anymore. Spotify, that's the other one.
Spotify. God,
I'm screwing up. So all those things. And you hit our Podbean link there too, and it takes you to our news archive website, and all the links are there too for the pod. I think we're on Podchaser. We're on all kinds of shit. Shouldn't be able to not find the Rebel Radio Podcast. But until next week, thank you as always for listening. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Remember, as always, just go there and
do it.